This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project.
All right, Mind Muscle Project, welcome back.
Wait, I did a test.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. We're here. We're here on the after show. We didn't test shit. All right, so guys, thank you very much for tuning in. If it's the first time listening, which probably isn't, there's so many podcasts that we do, right? So many we listen to. We're getting interviewed in one of the radio stations, a podcast that the radio station hosts. One of our most popular radio stations, Nova 969 in Sydney. And he asked us a question. He's like, guys, crazy, like 900 episodes, been doing it for so long. And I reflected on it and realized it's very confusing for people that first arrive. And so I think we're going to have a discussion, the podcast team, about how we can make things easier. But one of the things that we've done is we do have a link where basically you can go on and we will text you a podcast every day for 30 days. And that's our best episodes, our most downloaded episodes, a really good starting point for everyone. So that I believe that is at themindmuscleproject.com/text. Yeah, T-E-X-T. And you can just put your mobile number in. You click the button, you type daily podcast into that number that it takes you to, and then essentially get a podcast every day for 30 days. So super cool. And yeah, definitely check it out if you're brand new and you're looking for a starting point. Now, before we dive into the meat of the bones of this show, we actually got sent from... Can we give credit to this person? Who is it? Do you remember their name?
Yeah.
Who was it?
Josh Friedman.
Oh, okay. Your brother?
Yeah.
Fan of the show. So he's... There's a new podcast. I don't want to promote other podcasts we've never listened to before, but Josh Bridges, Matt Fraser, and Sivan Matossian have decided that they're going to call a podcast after their first name. It's pretty fucking arrogant. Josh, Matt, Sivan.
I got this right. Sivan is the behind-the-scenes guy,
camera guy,
right?
Yeah, camera guy. I guess they all shit at CrossFit now and all retired. So, they just like want to do a podcast where they just talk shit.
I feel like Matt's still good at CrossFit.
He's all right. He's retired, just like us. So, anyway, they've started a podcast and they started talking about us on the show. If you guys remember, we interviewed Matt Fraser 2016, I believe. And only recently.
17.
Yeah, 17.
He was already the champ.
Are you sure?
Yeah, he was the champ. Because we went to watch him win the CrossFit Games in 2016.
Okay.
In the States. And then we came back. And then, yeah, he was the champ.
Your memory with exercise-related stuff is better than mine. So, I'll trust you on that. So, but then, since then, never heard anything about it. Never spoke to him since then. He's never mentioned us before until now. So, 5 years later, he's mentioned something else. So, we're going to play it live. This is actually the first time I've heard it. But You've already heard it, Raph?
Yeah, I've heard it.
Okay. All right. So let's listen into what he said.
Kind of tough because not everyone has good intentions. And so, like, I've had a couple where, like, it ended or, like, you're like, yo, delete that whole thing. Like, what the
fuck
were
you
thinking?
You've said that?
One time. It was so bad.
It was so bad. I would love to hear that. I would love to hear that podcast.
Wait a second. So tell me in more detail what happened. So you're on a podcast. It's just you and the host?
Yeah, there's two hosts. So I redid the podcast with them.
Definitely awesome.
Oh, you did? Well, that's nice.
Yeah, the next day.
Even harder.
The next day, we redid the podcast because I was like, guys, like, why are you talking to me on these topics? I don't know anything about that. And like, I don't have that type of sense of humor where I'm talking about just silly things. But I was like,
would you rather eat poop from a mule or from Josh Bridges?
Exactly. Like that kind of shit. Really, really silly stuff. And I'm sure I was being super critical on it. Like the scenario in my head, I'm sure was worse than reality, but I was like, no. Like, right. You're not airing that. Like, I'm doing this. I'm not gaining anything out of this podcast. Like, this is trying to help you out type thing or try to get a message, whatever it was. I got up extra early before we had to do our, like, I think I was at a seminar or something. And so I just got up extra early the next morning and did it before the seminar kicked off. Because I didn't want them leaving empty-handed and just, like, wasting their whole trip. But at the same time, I was like, all right, you're not doing that at my expense. I mean, it's just tough because it's, like, not everyone – you get more clicks. Like, if someone's starting up a podcast, they get more clicks for saying some outrageous shit and getting something controversial than they do about – putting thought into good.
That's enough. We get it. All right. Yeah. No, I mean, to his credit, he did go and re-record it the next day, which was good. And it was really good. Man, I think we just caught him off guard with the questions. We asked him about, we asked him some jokes about religion. And it obviously correlating with being like the fittest on earth.
One of the ones he was most upset about was the squatty potty.
Man, I can't
somehow the topic came to whether he used a squatty potty or not. It was like one of the things to help you take a shit, but you're like, you're squatting when you take a shit.
And, we've come a long way with our question asking. No, but to be fair, he came back and he delivered a better podcast.
He did.
I would say it was a better show.
We actually ended up releasing that episode he's talking about anyway, but we took out the bits he didn't want to
edit.
So both episodes are actually still online.
We just, edited.
But he did come back and make a big effort the next day. He was doing a training camp, and I will say, like, the one thing I thought that he made a really big effort for our show, but the one thing I did find disappointing in the camp was, I don't know if you recall this either, was like, he was like full God at the time, right? Full CrossFit Games champ. All these people had, sacrificed a lot to come to his camp. And I felt like he just used it as his own training for the 2 days. And like in the breaks and shit, like didn't really speak to anybody. Just like wasn't, I guess, the hero like you were hoping to meet.
I just think Matt's one of those guys that he just likes to do his own thing. He doesn't really like being famous. He's like, I'm going to be really good at the sport. I'm going to win. I'm going to get money out of this. But I think all the media stuff on the side of it, he just like despises.
It's not what he wanted. He was pretty clear he didn't want to be there very much. Seemed like he'd just been roped into it. And he's like, I just want to be training.
I think he gets a lot better. I think he got a lot better, I should say, over time. Over time, yeah. Whereas, I mean, just in the beginnings, I guess it's just not one of those things that you really want to do if you just love the training side of things, right? And the competing side of things. The media side of things, especially with an expectation in CrossFit, it's not official. It's not on a live television and, you're not proper. There's no expectation. Now it's always like, hey, do my podcast, do this, do that. And he's like, oh, well, it's not really why I got into this. So I can sympathize with that. And if Matt is listening to this, I mean, we do our thing these days. We're separate from CrossFit. It doesn't really make any difference to us. Like, we don't really care. And, last time we got a CrossFit athlete on, I can't even remember. We forge our own path, doing our own thing. So I would hope that in the future, if we sat down, had a beer, or went for coffee, or did training session, things would be cool. Like, he seemed like a decent guy. I just think the context of the time, just wasn't great.
And to his credit as well, that was our biggest show for a long time.
Yeah.
If you remember, we were obviously mostly a CrossFit audience. And I think after having him on, we had our biggest month we'd ever had by a very long stretch. So he did definitely help the show. And it was kind of cool. I remember because I did it after this, I listened back to a bit of it. And after that, I went back, I was like, because I was trying to think about it, I was trying to remember it.
So that's how you remember the squatty potty.
And I went, because I was trying to remember, what were the things we asked him in it? And it actually was quite interesting because we did it after he'd won it once, and heaps of stuff he talked about, kind of did play out over the next few years. Obviously had insane success over the next 5 years. And I still remember from that weekend, it actually was crazy. He basically just did his own training for 2 days and everyone paid to do this camp. And fucking by the end of the camp, dudes were absolutely destroyed.
Trying to keep up with his training.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It was insane. Like, he did probably 5 or 6 workouts a day. And I remember one of the workouts was half an hour, all his EMOMs, all this shit. And it was actually his warm up. He's like, yeah, that's how I do my warm up. And it was 30, 40 minute EMOM. Some crazy shit. It was light. It was burpees and rowing and empty bar thrusters. But it was pretty, pretty savage. Everyone was absolutely belted. He's like, yeah, that is the warm up.
I would love to see him go into the next phase, because obviously he's a savage. The next phase of his life to be like Iron Cowboy shit. I'd love to see him do the Bros Edgley Iron Cowboy shit. It's cool. I was a CrossFit game.
He can do some stuff.
That's what I mean.
He is an... And he's so... And I didn't realize, but I think he's still really young. I think he's 31.
Yeah.
I think he's... I'm 99% sure he's not any older than that.
Yeah, I would love to see Matt Fraser be like, oh, cool, you did 100 Ironmans in 100 days? I'll do 200 in 200 days.
He could do.
Yeah. Because obviously competitive, if he announces something like that, he would go after it. So I think it would be... And obviously his thing is training, right? He's not a business guy. He's not a media guy. He's not going to transition into anything. He's an athlete at heart. So I feel like I'm excited to see him do some crazy shit like that next. So we'll see what happens. To stay relevant, right, as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. You fall away from relevance. Because even someone like Froning was super famous, he's fallen away a lot. But he still kept competing.
Yeah.
If you don't do anything, you do get you do get a bit forgotten.
Yeah. And as much as someone doesn't like the spotlight or whatever, everyone likes to be a little bit known and a little bit famous. So that will, I think once you've had that taste, you've been out there, people are fucking cheering your name, sending you messages and shit. No one's immune to that. No one doesn't want anything to do with that ever. So he'll always want something, I believe, or people will always want some taste of notoriety. Probably just not to the same extent, but I reckon he'll end up doing some crazy challenges like that. But anyways, talking about staying relevant is, you know, we had just good friend in general, Calm Porter, come visit Locker Room this week, and he is still so fit, so sweaty, but also so fit.
You know, actually, a good one with Khan. So Khan came that weekend where Matt Fraser was training.
Yeah,
and
it was at Khan's gym.
Yeah, it was at Khan's gym, and I don't know if you remember, they had like their massive Christmas party. Khan likes to party, right?
Yeah,
he was so hungover. Walked in, like you could just tell he still smelled of alcohol. Probably like 1 p.m. the next day, and Matt's like, "Oh, we're doing the next workout in 10 minutes." Khan's like, "All right, fine, I'll do this one with you." Did no warm up, nothing, and to his credit, was probably still about 15 seconds behind Matt.
Yeah, Khan is a freak. Khan is an absolute freak. So I remember what you said on your post. You posted Khan coming in. It's like, he trained so much that when we first saw him, I'm like, dude, that's stupid. And we were training a lot.
It was
back
stupid.
Then. Yeah, and since then, he's still managed, despite all his injuries and everything. What is it? Out of the 9 seasons he's competed, he's qualified for the game 7 times.
Yeah.
Including his very first.
Including the very first time he's doing CrossFit.
Yeah. And the other time, I think he missed out by one spot.
Yeah, he just missed 1 year. I think 1 year was a bit off.
Yeah.
We saw him. I think it was 2017.
That's so many
and
years.
I think I want to say he came like 5th or something. Like, yeah, like 1 or 2 spots out. Because he was nearly going to make it in the last workout. Extremely impressive. Because, man, everyone now that's doing it, I've like never heard of. And it's like 7 years younger.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, I don't know any of them. Let me ask you this. Like, say you were, because Khan also opened the gym, right? And was like dabbled in the business side of things and still is involved, but less of his focus these days. If you had been a really good athlete like Khan's level, like say you qualified for the games individually and like you went a couple years in a row and stuff, do you think you would still be like him, like still competing if you like naturally without like heaps of training, you were always like a top 5 guy in the country?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you'd still compete?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be like, you know what? I've had my time at the top, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to go do the business side of things now. You think you'd still keep competing?
Yeah, I think so.
Alongside your business stuff?
Yeah, because you've got plenty of time for the business stuff. That's the thing. Athletic really is a clock. It depends on what sport you're doing, obviously.
Yeah,
golf,
yeah.
Maybe a longer clock.
Yeah.
But for most stuff, there's a clock and it's about to end. Whereas the business stuff these
but
days...
But even if it made you no money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
so. It's still run it.
It's short time, and I think it's good for people. Like, I really think, like, yeah, you can get ahead if you want, start the business stuff in your 20s, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
A lot of people that start it in their late 30s, plenty successful. Because you have, it's more about, you know, how well you do it than just like how early you started. A lot of people start early and not very successful.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you got 60, 70 years to do that
stuff. Well, you'd be starting from the bottom again.
Yeah, you'd be starting from the bottom. But you get the life experience. You know, I think there's a lot of life experience in doing sports that carries over that still counts.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of what you're getting in your 20s is experience anyway.
So, you think you'd be able to keep the... Like, I think if you asked me this question, I would say no, purely because I think I'd lose interest, even if I was good. I just think naturally I'm one of those people that I find it very hard to stick with one thing, as you know, right? Bit of shiny object syndrome, but, you know, I like to see important things to me, follow through with them, but I could imagine even if I was going really well, I just get bored. I just like want to do something else.
The only exception I would say is one thing I've always found with sports, as soon as I feel like I can't be as good as I was in the past, I lose interest like immediately.
Yeah.
As soon as I'm like, oh, it's like a bit of a downhill now, like within a month I'm like, oh, I can't.
Yeah.
I have trouble doing it anymore.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's always an interesting discussion. But anyway, still absolutely murdered that workout because I've been doing, I'm building up to a bit more running, but I assumed.
But you didn't say the workout we did. We did.
We did regionals workout.
Yeah, we did a regional. But it's not, I think it's just the Australian one, he said. It's not like everyone in the world.
Yeah, I don't know how that works these days, but 5K run.
5K run, 7K bike, and it's meant to be a 2K ride. I did a ski.
Yeah. I just did the run because he wanted to push in the run because he wanted to like pace off someone who's pretty good at running. So I was like, all right, I'll go like an 80, 85% effort here. Ended up like he was ahead of me for most of it. So I'm like, fuck, and to beat him here, I'm going to have to really speed up. And so I was calling out like every sort of, what was it, like every K, every sort of like 500, then like every 100 meters just to kind of keep him up with me. And he got off like 1 second ahead of me.
Yeah.
Fuck's sake.
I don't know if you felt like the treadmill, did you think it was harder than running on flat?
Look, I don't know how fast he is on flat, but I would.
But for you personally?
No, but I was going to say that I think what, like listening to him run looking at his posture when he was running, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I could run a lot faster than him on the cement. And he said he's been doing very little running. Thing is, Khan's just a beast, right? Yeah. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised. And he's competitive, right? So, if I started running, like, he'd just do whatever it took to fucking beat me in it. But with running on the treadmill, you do go faster. Like, the speed is actually faster, I think. Mm. But when you're so used to just one thing, even if you can go faster on another thing, it's just, like, not what you're used to. So, I think it gasses you out a bit more. Because, like, 5Ks at that pace, I've run 10Ks at that pace on cement. And it wasn't as hard as the 5Ks it was. So I think that something about that treadmill, even though you're running faster according to the clock, I don't know, maybe because I wasn't used to it, it just gassed me out a bit faster.
Yeah, I think you fatigue quicker. Yeah. So I agree as well. I think you get on, you're like, oh, I'm going faster than I would outside. But by the end, my legs were like locking up.
Yeah.
Whereas I wouldn't be locking up after 23 minutes of running outside.
Yeah, I've just perfected, or I'm trying to perfect my running technique, like real running, that then I think my running style changes a little bit on the treadmill. Mm. I try to keep it the same, but because I lose that kind of lean forward, that kind of pull with the hamstring, like ball the foot landing, on the treadmill, it's more just kind of like, I don't know, just whatever gets the belt going faster. Yeah. It's like it just seems to gas you out a little bit more. I think it's less like gravity involved, less momentum involved, and it's just like more work to turn that belt over, even though it's turning over faster. Yeah, because you can't really use that fall technique. It doesn't really, it sort of works, but you go too fast.
Because when you're running, you're falling forward, whereas on a treadmill, you're pulling a belt.
Yeah.
And there is a difference.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think visually it looks the same. I think the muscles and how they're working is different. Because I did feel more gas. I'm like, fuck, that was hard 5Ks. Yeah. But anyway, so what is this thing you're just talking about? Calories for growth.
Oh, this would be surprising for you. So we were in the gym this week and one of the members is like eating about 1,000 calories, right? But I think he's eating like 900 calories that day. And he did like a big
one. One of my clients?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, fuck, that's like not many calories, you know, for a pretty large individual. And he pulls up all right from it. Obviously, some days are a bit higher, but he's generally probably averaging, maybe like 1,400 calories.
Yeah, it's supposed to be at like 1,200, 1,300, yeah.
So, I went home and I was like, oh, I wonder how much Ziggy eats, right? Ziggy's 9 kilos.
He's on a rapid fat loss protocol.
Yeah, Ziggy's not on a rapid fat loss protocol. But,
why not?
Put this in perspective, right? So, he weighs 9 kilos. This guy probably weighs like 80 kilos, yeah?
85.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guess how many calories Ziggy eats in a day?
Maybe
he weighs 9 kilos.
800?
1,100.
Fuck. Yeah. 1,100 calories. For 9 kilos.
9 kilos. But also, he doesn't do workouts and shit. He naps like twice a day.
So he's sleeping. But he's growing like constantly.
He's growing.
It's massive.
But that is unbelievable. He's so small. Like he's
not crazy.
He's nearly 10% of his weight and he doesn't do workouts and he takes 2 naps a day and he's on 1,100 calories.
It just shows how many calories are required to
build tissue.
Build tissue.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, what's the difference? I'm like...
But it's all tissues.
At first, I was... it's everything, right? His brain's getting bigger. Bone, I think everything except his eyeballs are getting bigger.
Tissue.
Teeth.
Heart. Yeah. Organs.
Everything is growing. So, I get it. Yeah. A lot of stuff is growing and it's growing fairly quickly. The way he puts it, he reckons that by the time you turn 2...
Wait, how do you know it's 1,100 calories?
We worked it out. So, I obviously went through how much he eats every single day. The only hard one is breast milk.
Okay.
It's hard to work out. But then I just went online.
MyFitnessPal?
It's probably there. Then you can just go online and you just work out like how much a baby weighs, how many calories recommended. And it was recommended like 1,100 calories. And when I worked it out, he was eating around 700 calories a day. So, he was getting the rest from breast milk.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But they have like estimates for you online. Like, it's standard amount of calories.
Could you push him to bulk faster?
100%. Easy. I already am. So, like, I just... Because he was eating probably 800 and then we wanted to gain weight more. And I just... pretty much anything he eats, I just smother butter all over it.
Right.
He just thinks that's how food tastes. Like, oh yeah, everything's got butter on it.
He's going to be like 25 years old, just like with a stick of butter in his mouth. But I don't know why I like butter so much.
Well, did it work? Because he was in the bottom, whatever, 1% of people's weight.
Yeah.
And now,
of baby weights.
Of babies his age.
Yeah.
And now he's 50%.
Bottom 1%.
Yeah.
Wow. So he's
The scale goes down to 3% and he was way below 3%.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing 1%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now he's 50%.
Right.
So, he has done a rapid weight gain protocol.
Fuck, that's pretty good.
And he's not fat. I think he's more just like a bit taller. But yeah, I just couldn't believe it. I was like 1,100 calories and he's 10% of the weight. But I guess you grow fast because they were saying by the time you get to 2, you're half your adult height. So, he's grown half the amount he's ever going to grow.
Wait,
by the time
at 2?
Yeah, 2 years old.
You're half your adult height.
Yeah, you can double it for boys. And that'll be like within 5% your adult height.
Bro, there's no way when I was 2 that I came up to my waist.
Yeah, so how tall are you now? I think 2 meters, but yeah. More than 2 meters.
No, yeah. No. 190.
Yeah, so I think you'd be about
85.
85 centimeters. Yeah. At 2 years old. Yeah.
So, you know, I have no idea. Yeah. I didn't measure it, but okay. That seems like it could be close.
Yeah.
Seems so like ballpark.
It's pretty close. And yeah. I think for girls even, it's actually slightly younger than 2.
Yeah, right. Fuck. The calories for growth is just, when you put it like that, it's just absolutely crazy because... Actually, I was having an interesting conversation last Friday with Jordy, the fight dietitian. He came came and trained to the gym. You saw him briefly, yep. Right, before he left. But we were talking about how this new study that he's been looking into, some of the research of, with like your body. Because you know how everyone kind of works? Stupidly, people work in sort of like 24-hour cycles with their calories, right? It's like, okay, so my goal is to hit 1,500 calories today and I'm going to adjust my calories based off the meals and the snacks I eat throughout the day to hit that today. Whereas the better and the more flexible advice, I would say, that we give our clients is a 7-day average. It's like, hey, the total, it's 1,500 times 7. That's your total for the week that you need to stay under. You can do that however you want. Mm. So like Mondays, you go super low, Tuesday super low, Wednesday super low, really busy Thursday, client lunch, ramp up Thursday, but that's all right. You're still averaging 1,500. And it's a bit more... It just accounts for weekends, right? Yeah. Social events, which is why I like the 7-day average. He reckons that the body runs, some of this new research, runs like 6-month averages.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Imagine using all your cows up with 2 months to go.
Well, not quite to that extent. But what he's saying is that if you go for 6 months in like a deficit or a surplus, what happens is you've kind of accumulated like a large amount of debt and a large amount of surplus. And then what he's saying is, and this is more for like... This is not like, oh, I'm slightly in deficit. Most people hit maintenance, right? So, they're kind of like maintaining all their deficit for a little bit. But it's like, no, purposeful deficit for a very long period of time. Purposeful surplus for a very long period of time. Like, hey, in the last 6 months, like COVID, right? I've gained like 10 kilos.
Yeah.
On the last 6 months, I've lost like 10 kilos. Like people who are intentionally in a big deficit. And he used examples of fighters. He's like, they finish a fight camp, like an 8 to 12 week fight camp. They're 100,000 calories in debt. And what he's saying is...
100,000.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Over 3 months.
Yeah. And what he's saying is like, basically, when you have such a large deficit or you have such a large surplus, you can be... What happens is you find more extreme behaviors on the other side. So, for example, at the end of a fight camp, it's why when fighters finish, they eat so much fucking food, like crazy. They have 5,000-6,000 calories a day for like weeks and weeks and weeks. And they don't really get fat. Like, they could if they kept going, but like for 2 or 3 weeks, they have so much debt that like for the next 2 weeks, they can just eat whatever they want. And like their weight will obviously come up, but like they'll still have a six pack. They'll still look pretty good. They'll gain a little bit of weight, but they'll be fine because like the debt accumulation is so big that it's not like you're not now working off 7-day averages. You know, it's like, okay, where do we want to get back to maintenance? Like, no. No matter what happens over the next like 3 or 4 months, you have like 100,000 calorie deficit that like you need to like fulfill.
So would you say it's kind of
stabilize?
Yeah. So you were in that huge deficit. If you ate, in theory, it's never perfect, but if you ate at maintenance calories exactly after that,
you'd be
point,
doing yourself a disservice.
But you would, but you might keep losing weight because you're never replacing that deficit.
I'm not sure if you would keep losing weight necessarily, but I don't think you would get back to like your body's optimal level because your body like wants to restore homeostasis where your hormones are functioning the best, where you're performing the best and stuff, which is why the guys just eat like crazy because their body's like, I'm in such a fucking crazy deficit, and then as soon as you let go of any sort of like, I'm not preparing for a fight, I don't have to watch my weight. He's like, naturally, they'll just eat so much. Like, if he's not tracking it, he'll just be like, fuck.
Yeah, you're saying like the hunger signals. Like, your body will release hunger signals to get you back all the way till you... kind of like sleep.
So, I'll give you another example, right? More relevant to us, James Magnuson, right? When he went on that show, however long it is, 2 weeks, and he lost all that weight, his calorie deficit for that period of time... Remember how he said, oh, there was like... I was fucked up. Like, I couldn't stop eating. Like, it was crazy. 5, 6 times. Put all this weight back on. That's just his body restabilizing from that huge period of time. So that would kind of be like another piece of evidence. Now, probably what's most relevant to most of the population is they've been in this rapid weight gain phase for a very long time. Because that's how the conversation came up. I said, okay, well, I've got clients that probably been in like a surplus for like way too long. They've put on like 10 to 15 kilos in the last 12 months. And they're like, now they're kind of maintaining it. He's like, cool. So they're basically in like... say 100,000 calorie surplus. Because I was like, oh, do you think it's like too extreme to put these guys on Martin McDonald's rapid fat loss protocol, which is like 50 to 40% of their calories, their maintenance calories? And then that's basically what he answered. He goes, no, because their total tank surplus is insane, right? They've had enough calories for a long time. So he's like, you run that shit down until their body looks like it's a healthy body weight. He's like, just let it run down. I'm like, what about diet breaks and hormones and stuff? He's like, look, yeah, they're going to be a bit flat. They're going to lose a little bit of energy. He goes, but you're not going to fuck their body up. There's no going to damage their metabolism.
Because they're in such a surplus.
They have so much body fat to lose. Right? It's not healthy to carry around excess amounts of body fat. It's like, so run that surplus. I go, what about diet breaks? He goes, the only research to support diet breaks, and he goes, which is the reason you should do it and why they're so important, is nothing physiological. It's purely psychological. And that's what I've observed running this person on this protocol now. The diet break, like the, hey, today you can eat maintenance calories, is not because it's like, now I'm replenishing glycogen and like restoring energy and like repairing the metabolism. No, it's none of that stuff. It might be a little bit of the glycogen stuff, but what it is, and he said it is the most important thing, because we're all human, is like it's a psychological break.
Yeah. And something to look forward to.
Exactly. Yeah. And he said that's really key for adherence. Yeah. And then, but he's like, in terms of getting that weight down, he's like, do it. Run it. Fucking make sure they're fucking moving. Make sure the NEAT doesn't go down. Run those shit into a deficit, because they are in a massive surplus.
Like when people do this, sort of like they're really fat and then they just don't eat for a while. And you're always like, oh, but they're not getting any of their minerals and they're not getting this, not getting that. It's like, yeah, but they're getting so much healthier from just losing the fat.
Yeah.
That it literally outweighs all those things. Like, they're missing vitamin C. Yeah, they're missing that. But they've lost 20 kilos. They're so much healthier.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. But I just thought I'd share that with you. I thought it was good. Hey, by the way, for anyone listening, we just got the entire RecGen Generation 2 drop with all the creature in the locker room stuff. I know some of you guys listening to this are our clients. Incredible stuff. I think he's definitely done a much better job with it, but I just thought I'd...
Oh, we got the Jim branded stuff.
Yeah, I just thought I'd mention that. It's really done a really good job there. And I know they got more really good stuff coming out in the future. But yeah, if you're curious about RecGen's new drop, very similar styles.
Style, it is different. A number of people said like, oh, the shirts are different.
Yeah, but the fit, I think, is a little bit better. I think a bit more accurate. So large is a bit more of a large. Medium is a bit more of a medium. Yeah. Whereas before, I was wearing an XL. It was a bit tight.
I was a large for the first time in my life.
I'm not wearing an XL in these brands. So I think he's got the sizing a bit better. And yeah, I think the quality's gone up a little bit more. And so I'm excited for all the stuff that's coming next that they're doing. And for the people that are asking, we are not selling locker room apparel. It's only for the clients. Only for the clients and staff.
But you can get RecGen.
Yeah, you can get RecGen. Yeah, you just can't get RecGen plus locker.
Well, you could just draw it on.
You could draw it on, yeah. But I think what's most exciting is actually today, and we're going to do a full podcast on this for you guys, but for a Thursday show, but what day are you on? Day 60?
I'm not sure. I finish on Thursday.
Okay. So like day 70 or something?
Yeah.
I am on day 75.
Wow.
Yeah, but actual days running the challenge.
You nearly messed it up. You got the wrong food.
What do you mean?
You just remember you went and got someone's breakfast. Well,
I could eat that.
That's a croissant?
No, I can eat a croissant. No, but I couldn't have croissant and toast.
Ah, yeah. Too much.
Yeah. No, so I can have like one or the other. Yeah. And I can only have like two pieces. So it's really what's the equivalent bread to like two pieces of toast, basically, for pastries and stuff. But I'm looking forward to sharing the stories and the lessons and all that sort of stuff. I don't want to get into it now because I want to do it both together when we finish it. There's still a chance that I could fuck it up, still a chance that you could fuck it up. But I think we're pretty good. I think we've gotten pretty used to it.
Your motivation gets very high at the end, right?
I'm pretty happy for it to be. I think I'm motivated to get it done.
Oh, that's what I mean.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Your motivation to not fuck it up is extreme.
Yeah. So 75 hard is over tonight for me, which would be good when I go to bed. Wake up the next day and have a Sunday that is probably slightly less productive, I guess, but also less stressful. But has taught us a lot of stuff. But anyway, we're going to reserve a whole podcast for that in 2 weeks. So we'll do that then. All right, cool. Before we jump into all the listener questions today, we've had quite a few people enter this, but you still, if you enter it, you still have a really good chance of winning. But our programs, as you guys know, the mymuscleproject.com/programs. We've got the fitness program, we've got our strength program, we've got our body program, we've got our mobility program. They're all around the 8 weeks. If you guys are looking for a new training system to start a new training cycle and you want a slightly different focus, you want a strength focus, you want an aesthetic focus, you want a fitness focus, grab one of the programs. And if you live in New South Wales and you're close by or you're driving distance, for the month of May, if you use the code giveaway when you check out to one of our programs, I mean, fuck, guys, you're getting the sick training program already. But as a bonus to anyone that purchases in this month and uses our code, we're going to put you up in a hotel, a beautiful hotel in the city. You're going to get a half day with us. We're going to train at the locker room. We're going to get lunch. And then you're going to sit in on an after show and ask a listener question live. So very much looking forward to that. And looking forward to meeting those people as
well. And we will be done 75 huts, so we don't have to stick to our diet.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. First question, actually, we've got two questions that are more business show related, so you can keep sending them in, but we are going to save them and answer them on our Friday business show, so we will get to them. First fitness question is Andy Scammell, top five, it's actually quite funny, top five excuses you hear all the time from people who can't train or are supposedly injured.
I really think, just before we give specific examples, there is no excuse. Like, there actually isn't an excuse. If there are good excuses, there are bad excuses.
Funny excuses.
There's a range of excuses people give, but legitimate excuses to not train under any circumstances. I get there's an excuse to not come to the gym. It's like, I actually couldn't get there today. But an excuse not to look after your health and not train for a day is complete bullshit. It's just bullshit. That's all it is. It's just limiting beliefs. And some people just have no excuses. Like a David Goggins, right? He just gets it done no matter what. No matter what, right? Comes out of fucking spinal surgery and starts running or whatever.
Dude, he injures himself before the race to start harder.
Yeah. So like those guys, even though they're not you, they're proving to you that there is no fucking excuse. Now, I have excuses that I make, right? Where I try not to. Raf has excuses that he makes. He tries not to. But then when you do something like 75 hard, it teaches you that excuses don't really exist. And then you start hearing them from other people and you start realizing you're just limiting yourself. You're just limiting yourself. So anyway, there is no actual excuse. Probably the only thing I'd let you off is unless you're like medically bound to the fucking hospital bed and they're like, no, I don't want to see you do anything today. But if you're like, hey...
Yeah, that's just like, it's so rare that it's like not what people talk about.
It's going to be like a spinal surgery or something, right? They're like, nah. But if it was like, hey, okay, well, you can stand, you know, for 10 minutes or whatever, like, stand.
Yeah, don't they have the... Remember on those shows where like they have like the hand bike?
Yeah.
Lying in bed and they do
the hand
bike?
There's always something you can do. There's always something. You can lift your head off the pillow and do yeses and nos to train your neck.
Yeah.
You know, there's always something you can do. And if you do something, even as silly as it sounds, it's like, no, I'm staying on track. Still working my body. I'm still pushing hard. So, no, I get it. I get it. There are some things that, you know, it kind of exists in the realm, but objectively, there are no excuses.
Well, I'll give you a good example, which was when I hurt my Achilles recently, I still had to do my outdoor workout every day. And I was like, ah, sucks. Normally, I would just completely rest at it. But I've pretty much done like running or walking or something like that for my outdoor workout every day. I didn't really know what else to do. So, I just kept doing it, basically, and just like moderated the intensity a lot. So, instead of running, it was like a slow walk. Or instead of a weight vest, it was like no weights. I just kept doing that. It was fine. You know, and that's like a good example. Where it's like, okay, cool. You can't run. Just walk.
Mm.
You know, stick to the program.
Yeah.
Still go out there. Maybe you do a bit less, obviously, because you're walking. You can't go as far. But you just, all right, you can't run today. It's going to be a walk.
I think that the best part has been is since you've had a kid, now we can really say like, no, we know. Like,
yeah.
He knows. Like, now you fucking have no excuse. Because everyone would say, yeah, but you haven't had kids.
That's true.
And now... you can like literally throw it in their face and be like, no, I just had it like fucking tiny. And then I'll have a dog. So I'll be like, nah, now I've got the dog excuse covered. Like I've got them all covered. You guys have no fucking excuse. But let's start with a specific example. First one, no time. That's always the worst, right? Oh, my schedule doesn't allow it. Work's busy. Family's busy. I'm like, bro, you can always, like, I know you spent 30 minutes on your phone today. I know you did something today. I get there are guys that are like super, super busy, like high level CEOs. But guess what? Most of those guys, they fucking train. Right? Those really super high powered guys that we have at Locker Room, they all come in to the gym. They don't pay for the membership and not show up. They pay and they go. So I know that the people that, because most people don't know those people, right? And they make up an idea in their head about what the high level CEO fund manager guy does with his time. And they're like, yeah, but I get it, bro. Like he's got so many meetings and stuff to go to and this and that. Some days he doesn't make it to the gym, but then he texts me and goes, all right, got my 20-minute walk in today. Did fucking 50 burpees this morning. Did something, right? There's always time. Do something. So, first one, no time. Bullshit excuse.
Yeah, and I mean, I would say even from 75 hard, there was some days where there was like no time to do the session and then it was like my transport for the day. Like, okay, cool. Well, instead of like driving or whatever, I'll walk or jog there.
Yeah.
And it might only take like an extra 7 minutes, even though I did 40 minutes of conditioning because it was going to take me half an hour anyway to get there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when you really start to take an order on your time, you can work it in.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like I did the, like day 73 was so hard. I fucking finished a 7:30 p.m. dinner. I left early from a networking event. I was like, I have two workouts to do. So, I pack marched to the gym and then did a workout.
Mm.
Did some work to break it up and then did a workout. Yeah.
Yeah, transport's a good one. Okay, second, I'd say worst one, this came up a lot this week, was the weather.
Oh, don't start with the weather.
This week it was slightly colder. Most of the world probably laughs at us for now, but it was probably like 8 degrees. I think you said maybe 7 degrees this morning, Connor. So like it is getting cold for Sydney, but we did have a lot of people.
It was 7 degrees this morning?
Yeah.
It didn't feel cold. Oh, at 4:30 a.m. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It was like, I mean, it's pretty much as cold as Sydney gets, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I see Melbourne gets to like -7. But yeah, I mean, that, I mean, we had a lot of people not show up to the gym even this week just because of the weather.
Yeah. It's, firstly, it's fucking weak if the weather stops you. And actually, the one thing I've been slightly annoyed about on 75 Hard, which I obviously hearing Andy preach about it, which I was, we got tested a little bit, is like the outdoor workout, the purpose of it is that, you know, conditions aren't always ideal for training and that for anything in life, right? So you just kind of have to get it done. The conditions are pretty much always ideal. Yeah. Sydney, the weather.
It is
so
true.
It's like, he tells some story where some guy was like, oh, dude, I think it's when he first invented 75 Hard and someone texts him like, dude, how's 75 Hard going? He's like, you know what? I actually wish it was harder. I wish it was colder outside. I wish it was like not 4 degrees. I wish it was -10 degrees. And that's kind of what I thought. Because, you know, if we had made it, like we did the rainstorm one, but that was kind of a novelty. Like in the rain.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But it was getting a bit more challenging towards the end. Just like a bit frustrated with it, but it wasn't too bad.
But if it was like so cold that I had to wear gloves and a coat and a beanie and it was like snowing and it was like raining, that's when you're like, I'm doing this. Yeah. Like every day I'm out in the snow and the rain and like that hardens you. And so I missed a little bit of that, which I wish was a little bit harder. But now, I guess you get that from cold showers a little bit. Mm. It's that contrast, right? It's like, oh, it's so warm in bed with my partner. I don't want to get out. It's so cold outside. It's fucking weak, bro. Just get out of bed. You know? Just get out of bed.
Okay, you got another one?
Well, I was going to say, but I guess it's kind of related to what I mentioned, but it's the kids, right? Oh, I guess it's kind of related to time, but it's like, no, my family. And I always, it's a time excuse, but it's kind of disguised as I want to be there for my family. It's really important to me. And I always just get them, I always throw it back on them. And I'm just like, but you're better when you look after yourself for your family. So like when you've done your workout, when you're drinking less, when like you're following a nutrition protocol, you can run. If they're young, you can run and you can keep up with them. You've got more energy. So like the little things they do that piss you off, don't even bother you. You've got higher stress tolerance. And, you know, perfect example, one of our members, he kept picking up his kid, injuring his back, and then did all the back corrective strength work with us and gotten heaps stronger, did his back again, but usually put him out, he said, for months. Put him out for a couple of days.
Well, he did it. He's done this before.
Yeah.
And he picked up his kid, like holding it out in front, right? Hurts his lower back. And yeah, he could barely move for a month.
No, he said months.
Yeah, but I'm saying he didn't come back to the gym for like, but I'm saying he could barely move for a month.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he took him about 3 or 4 months to come back to the gym.
Yeah.
This time it was like 3 days.
Yeah, less. 2 days he was back in the gym. So how are you better for your family when you're in so much pain? You have to lie on the couch when you get home.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is just, obviously, it's huge time amounts. Can be worse for mums, I think, than fathers. But it just means it has to be different. So it might just be like 25 minutes when the baby's asleep at home. But it's still something.
Yeah.
There is always time for something. But it might not be, your hour and a half at the gym with your perfect warm-up.
Yeah.
At like your favorite gym 25 minutes away.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Fourth one? Got one?
Man, I'm going to go back to the injury one, and I do think there's one in here of some people are just, they are always injured. So they like, they think DOMS is an injury.
Mm.
They're like, I'm so sore, I cannot train.
Yeah.
It's just soreness. Mm. There is no injury that you can train through any soreness. Mm. Like, yeah, it's not always ideal to do that, but just because it like kills when you squat down, man, you warm up and like barely hurts anymore.
Mm.
Like, I know they call it an injury, but really I would say it's just muscle soreness. That can never be an excuse not to train. Particularly because everyone knows the best way to get through soreness is just to keep moving.
Injuries are the worst one. I feel like injuries is just like you have other functioning body parts that you can use. Like let's keep doing this. In fact, your injuries are going to get worse and it's going to heal slower if you go to doing nothing. Because that's what people's default is. Their default is not, oh, I hurt my shoulder, I'll stop training. Sorry, their default is I hurt my shoulder, I'll stop training. And then their default needs to be, okay, I'm just going to train my legs for a bit till my shoulder gets better. Like even yesterday, we were doing boxing and I missed the pad and I kind of clipped my thumb on it and I like kind of ripped my nail inside the glove and I was like, ah, it's a bit sore. And I took it out. It started annoying me. And then I was with my brother and I was like, oh, have you ever done this to your nail? And he looked at me. He looked at the nail and he looked me in the eyes and he just turned away and I was like, yeah, probably shouldn't make any sort of injury or excuse around that. And I think what it is, like sometimes you just get used to being soft and then you do something that makes you a bit harder and then you get some damages from it and you're like, oh, fuck, like pretty injured here. But actually, no, when you push your body and you train hard, there's like a certain level of like inflammation and pain and niggles and stuff that you just kind of accept, but it's like comes with the territory almost a little bit. And it's not, I think you're lying to yourself to pretend like you'll never have like something that's hurting. Like, oh yeah, it's always a little elbow thing or a slight knee thing or, you know, you jive. It's just stuff that comes with training the body hard, right? But the benefits,
yeah,
it's always worth it.
That's like, oh, you're sore, injured. Oh, so you're just training.
Yeah.
It always reminds me, it's like when you would play any sport, but I remember I would go back to rugby and like your first week in, someone would like step on your hands when your hands are really cold. You're like, oh my God, like metal studs on my hands. Like that hurts so much. Like,
yeah.
Because you just forget.
Yeah.
But then like 17 weeks into the season, you're like a savage. You're like, I'm fucking stepping my own hands to get G'd up for this game.
Get warmed up.
Your mindset shifts. I don't know if you have one more, but the last one I was going to say was just probably the biggest one I get, which is just like, oh, I'm just tired.
Mm-hmm.
Tired is like one of the biggest ones. Hey, I'm really tired. I think the reality is that, one, you just need to know how to moderate your intensity. Yeah, you are tired. Probably not the best thing to go psycho in the gym, but who says you have to go psycho every single day in the gym? And then B, it's, I think we actually had the podcast guest, the strength coach of the All Blacks, Nick Gill.
Yeah, Nick Gill.
And he was talking about, they have like this research thing that comes out of the army. And it was like, even I think on your third day without sleep, it might have been your second day. I think it was your third day without sleep. It's only like a 10% drop off in performance when they study the army people. So obviously they're like pretty savage people, but you obviously feel way worse on the third day. But when they actually test them and force them to do physical tests of like strength and fitness, they're not that far off their best on a third night without sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. And the only one that I was going to add to the tired one at the end, which is a bit more of a specific example and potentially not every person out here relate to it, so it's not as broad this excuse, but when people try to give up alcohol and drugs, they often say it's related to their work, and that sometimes I find is a little bit of an excuse. They go, I go, well, let's give up some booze. Oh, I can't because, you know, I go out to client things and I have to entertain them, or like, oh, you know, I'm in the alcohol industry, it's part of my job or whatever. And look, I get that it correlates with business, but it's kind of that saying like, well, then if not me, then who, right? So if you're going to change the culture, who's going to do it if it's not going to be you? Or you're just waiting for some magical shift in the culture where they send out an announcement to your industry like, hey, guys, you no longer have to build rapport and relationship through drinking. It's like, no, you have to make the decision yourself what's more important to you. And look, if your work is more important to you and you think that taking drugs and drinking a lot of booze is correlated to you being more successful in business, I would firstly challenge that belief. But even if it objectively is the case, I would just be like, okay, what is the best way to do, what are workarounds here for me, right? Maybe we can't get rid of it completely, but maybe there is some workarounds here. Some of the stuff, for example, I say, oh, cool, guys, before you go out to these client lunches, I want a liter of water down the hatch within 20 minutes. That way, the first three or four drinks is not out of thirst. And so the mechanism in your brain that's like, I'm thirsty, is not there. It's switched off. And so like, you're not in as much of a rush. So if you always take the initial three or four drinks and you make it one, well, then every night that you go out, it's three or four drinks less, hopefully, in the total amount. So that's like a strategy you can do, or you can add some more water in or whatever. But what I have noticed is that, yes, they have that initial conversation, but once you start stacking lots of good behaviors together and you build that momentum there, you're less likely to just want to throw it all away with a big weekend. And so eventually I feel like a shift starts to begin where people are like, oh, you know what? That's why I kind of like, I think about Dry July and I'm like, why does it work? Why does Dry July work? Because it's coming up, right? A few of our clients are talking about it. I'm like, because you can just give up alcohol anytime. But what it is, it's the collective, it's like 75 hard, right? It's the collective excuse that's like, oh, I'm doing Dry July. Matt, I'm doing 75 hard. It's a great excuse. And everyone's like, oh, I get it. You're doing like that month sober.
The excuse makes all the difference. It's like, you know, I get a client like, dude, I have to drink. Oh, really? I'm like, is there anyone who's like higher up than you or same level that doesn't drink? Oh, yeah, dude. Like this one guy, he's like Arab. He like can't drink. Like it's against his religion. Oh, this other dude? Yeah, like it's really bad for him. He doesn't drink. Like, oh, so they're fine? Yeah, they're fine. You're like, okay.
Yeah, right. So it's just their belief. And remember, the more of that behavior you do, the more of those people that you attract into your life that like those behaviors. So probably one thing to consider as well.
Okay, Zach Bastian. So he is new to CrossFit and he's trying to learn double unders and he feels like he's hitting a wall and not making any progress. Gyms in Canada have been closed for 4 weeks and I managed to get must be a COVID thing, I assume. Get myself some weights and a barbell and pretty much every day I skip my warm-up for 10 minutes. I can do 100 single unders consistently, but with no real effort. But when I try and hit double unders, I can only consistently get 3 or 4. And I feel like it has not improved for the last 3 weeks or so. Are there any common drills you guys learn for skipping or learning double unders?
Very CrossFit specific question. single unders don't really correlate necessarily with double unders. So like telling us you can do single unders, that's good, but it has nothing to do with double unders really. I guess it's basic rope skills, but yeah, I know there's loads of people.
Boxers can destroy double unders and triple unders.
Yeah, but they can. Skipping. Yeah, but they can do it, everything.
They can do everything.
Yeah, with skipping. Yeah, but I mean, like, there's heaps of people that are like really good at single unders that can't do a double under to save their life. So like, I feel like they're almost completely separate skills. Like, I guess the point I'm making is getting better at single unders doesn't make you better at double unders. Yeah.
But I think one of the best things I learned is if you can just get better at skipping in general, it's the best.
Yeah, stronger calves, like the muscles involved with skipping.
Yeah, and you just get good at everything.
Yeah.
You can do like the tricks, you can do the triple unders, you can double unders. Whereas you just try and get better at double unders or single unders, you're like very one dimensional.
Yeah. In terms of drills, there's heaps of stuff on YouTube you can look at. I mean, everyone's different with like what they need to improve. Some people need to get stronger calves to jump higher more consistently. Some people need like timing better. There's a few things that it's a bit hard to answer without specifically knowing. But at the end of the day, nothing replaces just trying it, and just eventually it clicks, right? It's a skill. But yeah, I would definitely just be practicing that skill more.
Last question, which could be very, very valid for us now that 75 Hard is ending. What changes do you make to your diet or training if you're going out for dinner or drinks?
Yeah, so the first one is understand where you're going. I think that's the most important thing.
Where you're going out?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, like what restaurant are you going to? What food is it? And then thinking about if... it depends on your goal. Maybe you have no goals. So like most of the time, I don't care because wherever I'm going, I've trained that day. I do have loads of other healthy habits. So I'm enjoying myself. I'm not thinking at all about any limitations or anything. But if you are on something restrictive, like for example, the other night at a business networking event, one of the guys is like cutting for a bodybuilding show. And he's like, oh, I was really concerned about this place. So I looked at the menu and I like called them and asked them about what sauces and oils and stuff. I'm like, oh, bro, that sounds fucking awful. But anyway, it's your choices. But if you are serious and you do care about what's on the menu, then I think what you have to do is decide, okay, what do I need? How much of this menu can fulfill it? And then whatever's not there, I need to eat it beforehand or like drink it beforehand or avoid certain things beforehand. And then you just need to exercise that discipline when you're there, because it's like maybe one thing to say, okay, cool, I'm going to order the steak and the this, and then like the bread comes out, the chips comes out, like the sauces come out, and you just start eating them. But yeah, that's what I would do, is like maybe have a meal beforehand, a light meal beforehand, and then have like heaps of water beforehand as well.
Yeah, I do normally, it depends where I'm going, but often I will make some adjustments. So, and I usually prefer it space. If I'm like, oh, we're going out for Italian food, usually like in the breakfast and lunch that day, I'll just eat extra protein and I'll have like no carbs in the meal. And then I'm like, oh, perfect. I get there, I can just enjoy myself.
Yeah.
Get a pasta and I'm not stressed. Whereas if I've done nothing different, I might be like, oh, it's like no protein in the meal.
Yeah.
It's not ideal. Then I'll like maybe order something I didn't even want just to like feel a bit better about it. So I will often make a change like that. Or if I'm like going to some all meat place, I'm like, oh, cool. I'll just eat like just vegetables and carbs in the meals beforehand. And end of the day, I'm like, oh, beautiful. So that is like, I guess normally I'll make. And then what I would used to do in the past, when I was probably a bit more concerned about gaining weight, if I knew it was just like all bad food, I would just like not go that hungry. Mm. And you like still enjoy yourself. The worst is when you would turn up like so hungry.
Yeah.
And usually you even feel worse because you eat like so much of this bad food.
Yeah.
And you just feel disgusting after. And it's like you get the same enjoyment.
I hate myself.
But with all the bad side as well. So yeah, I do normally make a change, but I wouldn't stress it too much. Like we talked about, it's the calories over like, I usually say a week, but you're saying like 6 months.
You know, it depends if you... Yeah,
yeah, it depends how you look at it. But the point is, it's not about 24 hours. No. So you just don't need to stress that. You can even make it up the next day.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's all over when you go to bed that night.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like the 10,000 calorie challenge, right? The next day, we don't really eat till like dinner time.
Yeah, I remember we did that 10,000 calorie challenge. I was not hungry until... I think I didn't eat the next day. I can't remember.
I did eat breakfast.
Yeah, I remember you. I think I didn't eat at all the next day. So then by the next day, I was like, oh, I'm like even again.
Yeah. Yeah, like slightly surplus.
Yeah, but no, it wasn't because the day before I ate less as well to prepare for it.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, there you go. And you probably went like lots of activity, lots of walking and stuff, yeah. Yeah, it's just like your body's a pretty interesting machine. Anyway, before we dive into the book review today, which we're really just going to talk about one of the more recent books that we've started reading, is True Protein. The acquisition between True Protein and F45 obviously ruffled some feathers. People are a little bit unsure. We don't actually know all the answers, but we do know that right now the products are just as good as they've ever been. So make sure that you guys head over to the website, pick out the stuff that's good. You guys know you know what supplements you need. You listen to our show for a long time. You either need protein, probably need some ZMA, maybe creatine. Maybe you want to try some of the new stuff, the bars. They don't have cookies, do they? protein cookies.
Nah,
they should
just
have
the
protein
bars.
Cookies. Yeah,
but they have a cookie flavor bar.
They do. Yeah, loads of stuff, guys. It's the natural edge, right? It's all natural ingredients. The stuff is sweetened by proper sweeteners. It's just we just love it. So the mymustproject.com/trueprotein is where you can find your discount. Okay, so I actually wanted to bring this book up because we were talking about it last night. I haven't actually finished it, but you also read and understood the concept of it. Is the 10x rule by Grant Cardone, also known as Uncle G.
Is he really?
Yeah, some people call him Uncle G because he's a bit older, right? He's like 60 something now, but he looks really good for his age. But I guess like a lot of the other entrepreneurs that respect him a lot call him Uncle G because he's like the older, wiser, like business mentor to a lot of these guys. But Grant has a few books, but this book, The 10X Rule, he wrote in 2011. So it's kind of just on the tail end of the global financial crisis. So there's a little bit of, he mentions that in there quite a little bit, but he brings up essentially The 10X Rule seems pretty self-explanatory, but some of the rationale and reasoning behind it is very useful for people to understand. But basically, he's saying like, if you don't set a 10x goal, so it's two parts, right? 10x goals, what you want to achieve in your life, and then 10x actions, the actions required to achieve that goal. Most people either get both of them wrong or they get one or the other wrong. They set a 10x goal, but they underestimate the 10x action that's required to achieve it. Or in his case, he understood the level of action it was to hit his goal, and then he hit his goal and he realized, fuck, my goal wasn't big enough. And so like, that's his only regrets, is that he didn't set a 10x goal. So it's been a really interesting book to read, because I think probably what a lot of people do when they think of, and he goes through this in the book, is that when someone sets a 10x goal, maybe it's like, you know, I want to buy a house next to my parents' house. Maybe it's $1 million house, right? If your goal then is 10x, a $10 million house, most people think, oh, fuck, I could never achieve that, right? So they don't even believe it to begin with. But he's saying, let's just say, because he helps you do a bunch of exercises in the book. So let's just say you had to do a $10 million house, like that was your goal by whatever, say 40 years old. Then how would you change your life and your actions in order to achieve that thing? And it's a totally, it's just thought exercises, right? But I think what's interesting about doing thought exercises is that you realize at the end of the day, you can actually do these things. It's not more daunting than you expect. Sometimes you just think 10x and you just think, no, write it off, impossible, it's not realistic. Then he challenges you on like, what is realistic? And what is the definition of realistic? And how does the term realistic come about? Who sets the mode of realistic? Well, realistic is just the people in your life, their collective group think of their own, based off their own self-limitations. So they take the context of their life and what they've achieved. And when they say, oh, we'll be realistic, they're coming from their perspective of like, this is what I've been able to achieve in my life. And this is what you're kind of like me. That's why we're hanging out. So this is probably what you can achieve. And you start to realize, oh, fuck, like this person is kind of limiting me, or these people collectively are limiting me. If you go into another circle, right, say some of the circles that we're fortunate to be a part of and some of our clients, their definition of realistic, bro, it's like almost like they don't really have realistic. They're kind of, you speak with them and they're like, bro, you can do whatever you want. Mm. And then when you're surrounding yourself with people like that, it really kind of opens up your ability to think 10x and to think that it is realistic. And obviously we had this chat last night. So I think that it's a very, very worthwhile book for anyone to pick up. And quite honestly, if you read that book and it turns you off, probably not going to be cut out for anything fantastic in your life. That's the truth. That's the fucking
maybe just didn't like Uncle Jake. Yeah, another way, it's actually not from that book, but I mean, the 10x rule is like, it's not just Grant, but I think a lot of people do talk about it. And I heard it somewhere else. I thought it was a cool way to do it. And it kind of relates to fitness as well, which is often you like 10x some goal and then you think, oh, like makes you feel a bit weird. You're like, I don't think it's possible. But what they say is that if you just expand your time horizon more, then often it'll change the way you look at things. Because people often just thinking really short term. So I'm like, oh, I want to like, I could imagine doubling this, but I could not imagine 10xing it. They're like, oh, what if you gave yourself like 10 years to do it instead of 1 year? Then you're like, oh, I guess in 10 years it is possible. You know, so sometimes I think if you have a goal, could be an athletic goal, but it could be any goal really. If you just allow yourself to expand your time horizons, then you can think much bigger and like it'll feel more realistic for you.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like say, often with fitness, people like only ever think like 90 days ahead. How far could I take this? 90 days ahead. But if you thought, oh, how far could I get this in like 6 years of consistent training? You're like, fuck, I guess maybe I could actually do that 10x. And I think that is That can be another way as well. Sometimes you just feel that really uncomfortable feeling, like you don't believe it in your heart. But if you expand your time horizon, then you're like, man, maybe I actually could do this.
Mm. And the other thing I'll add about the 10X rule as well, which I think was helpful for me to understand, was that most people don't achieve their goals because the thing about a 10X goal that you commit to and that you decide to take action and attempt is that obviously you have to believe it, right? Which is like part of what you just mentioned. It's like, okay, cool. I'm going to set this 10X goal. I reckon I'm going to give myself time. I don't know, but I'm going to fucking go for it, right? Because if I fall short, same sort of thing. Shoot for stars, land on the moon. That'll be pretty good. Now, what his rationale behind it is, if you don't set a 10X goal, what ends up happening is the path towards the goal, because the path towards any goal has ups and downs, right? Has setbacks, has difficulties. And then the difficulties and setbacks will always be there. And he's saying that if it's not 10X, then you don't have the energy, the excitement, the enthusiasm, the creativity to overcome these setbacks. So when the first setbacks come, because the goal is not that big and not that exciting, you're like, I'm actually not going to push it because it's not really worth it in the end because the goal's not that big. But if the goal is 10X, like, man, I'll fucking do anything to achieve this goal. So the first setback comes, like, it's okay because when I get to there, bro, it's going to be so, so worth it if I can hit that 10X. So as long as you've made that commitment to yourself, when you face those setbacks, you're happy that you're facing those setbacks. You're happy to take on that challenge because you know the reward is so big. When the reward is just like so small, it doesn't seem like it. It's like, okay, you say, all right, well, you know, I'm pretty keen to like go to this local powerlifting meet and like, you know, I'd love to be top 10. Top 10 in this local powerlifting meet would be great. So it's like, you kind of go in, you start training, you got a coach, everything's going well, and then you get a little back injury and you're like, top 10 in the meet, like, come 9th to 10th. It's not really worth it. Oh, I'll go back, train, do some rehab. I pull it again. Fuck, man. Fuck this stupid goal. Like, it's not worth it, right? Now your goal is, I want to set the record in my weight class for the biggest deadlift ever, right, for my body weight. You're like, oh, I got a little setback. Dude, that's okay. Because I'm trying to be the best fucking deadlifter in the whole country for my weight category. That is so much more motivating. You're ready to take on any setbacks. You're willing to give up Saturday nights. You're willing to train in a completely different way. It's a totally different mindset when your goal is that big. And that's why, like, really great athletes that say, you know, I want to win a gold medal, or I want to do X or Y or whatever, they're way better off because, like, they're putting the actions necessary towards achieving that. So, yeah, I think fuck realistic and, like, 10X your goals.
Yeah, and very often if you look back in your past, there's usually something that you've 10X in the past, or at least maybe 4X or 5X. Because, like, you know, 10 is obviously just, it's kind of a nice number, but there's somewhere between, like, 5 and 20X, you know, kind of the same principle applies. And it's probably something you can look back in your life and you probably have actually done it already.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are some of the exercises you'll do. So, yeah, anyway, it's a worthwhile book to pick up. It's The 10X Rule by Grant Cardone. So, hopefully you guys will pick that up and enjoy it.
I think
and,
it's short as well, right?
Yeah, it's fairly short. Yeah. Make sure you pick it up. Let us know how you go. And guys, as always, we enjoy doing this for you and speaking to you. And if you think there's someone that needs to hear this stuff or you recommend it to someone, please just tell someone in person. You don't even have to share it on your stories anymore. Just let them know, hey, sick episode. Check it out. Shoot it across to them. And we always appreciate it. And guys, as usual, we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.